Welcome, Sandy Larkison Sharon. Is that the correct pronunciation, Sandy?
Yeah, that was pretty close. Larkison and Sharon. I accept most things that start with Alex at Loser.
That's right. That's right. Well, Sandy, welcome to our the last post inspirational women series podcast and interview to go in our coming edition. You've certainly done enough in your relatively short life to raise the attention that I found interesting too. And I'm so glad that we've had interest and cooperation and working with Defence Families of Australia. What puts you on this course, Sandy? Where did this all start for you as in education, et cetera? And you've done some marvellous things.
I suppose from an educational perspective, I finished high school and I didn't really know what I wanted to do, like so many people, especially in this day and age. So I was pretty good at science. So I did a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts, and then pretty much enjoyed that. So moved into the biology honours and worked with the penguins down at Phillip Island for the year, which was pretty amazing.
What was that
after
like?
That, I thought I need a beg pardon.
What was that like, the penguins? I know the penguins down there, not by name, but.
I was going to say there's a few with names. I couldn't tell you them now, but penguins are, now that I'm a new parent, I think more and more resembling teenagers for me. Mm-hmm. They've got some serious attitude. They stink, but they've a lot of character and a lot of charisma.
That's good, and that was an enjoyable experience for you. It's beautiful down there too. So what after that too, Sandy, what happened after that?
So after that I thought I'm still young enough to fail, but I'm still young enough that I need to broaden my horizons. So I packed up my car. I had no particular job in mind. I'd never been to New South Wales and drove my old Toyota Camry that I was treating like a four-wheel drive working in biology. Across the border into New South Wales, from Victoria to New South Wales. And I thought I was being really brave, crossed the border, and I saw a sign saying U-turns are illegal in New South Wales. And I wasn't sure if I'd done the right thing, but I couldn't turn around. So I kept going and set up shop in Sydney, initially as a boarding assistant with Abbotsley School, which was a really, really good ready-made family unit and good networking in the space. And got a series of amazing contract jobs with Parks and Wildlife Services and with Department of Environment for New South Wales. So it was an amazing time.
Yeah, that's of interest too. And I'm so glad you touched on the environment and heritage, both very important matters. And of course, I started my company in 2009, Business for Environment, and did some work with the South Australian Government on environmental issues. So I'm glad to see you've got that on your CV. What was that like for you, that period?
A really steep learning curve. It was my first big foray into a very emotional sector that needed a lot of help. Everyone in the sector has some sort of agenda, and the vast majority of those are to help others, to help the environment and to look to the future. So it was a lot of hard lessons that I learned in dealing with different stakeholders, in not necessarily having a perfect solution, but trying to find the best solution for multiple stakeholders.
Wonderful. And so what are your views on the environment and the heritage at the moment? Is it still an interesting place from an outsider's point of view?
I think it's something that everyone should keep in mind to a certain degree. Especially with climate change, dare I get political, it's something that will impact everyone, you know, if not already, then in future. We've already seen it with the bushfires. So I used to work with a lecturer at Monash University, a gentleman named Ross Thompson, who's brilliant. If you want to look up any of his
speeches, I've heard of Ross.
He's a wonderful presenter. Yeah, he's excellent. And I remember him saying something that really stuck with me was, he showed me a photo in a presentation of a little girl at a rock pool, and he said, "What do you think I want this little girl to grow up as?" And everyone went, "Biologist, obviously." And he went, "Well, no, I want her to be a banker. I want every banker, every salesperson, every minister to have an interest and to have some sort of education on the world around us." And I think we're starting to see the real implications of that with the financial costs of climate change starting to be quantified for our government as well.
Mm. Very well said. And it strikes me as quite odd when politicians or some politicians will cite economic fears at engaging in a positive way with the environment when the costs of not doing so are so much greater.
I think it depends on the term that you're looking at. And if you're looking at a political term, that may be the case in the short term. But if you're looking at a long term, the evidence is pretty clear.
Well said too. And of course, heritage is a very important part of who we are and what we were, and a beautiful area to be involved in and also to keep an eye on. And of course, we do, I think we're lucky, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, you've had more experience with this than me, but I think we're lucky in Australia with some of our heritage. We seem to have, seem to respect our heritage. We respect obviously the Indigenous heritage, but also since the white settlement too, we've got some beautiful buildings in Sydney and Melbourne that have been maintained. What's your view? And I suppose heritage goes beyond buildings.
I think so. I think there's the hard stuff that you can touch and feel, and then there's the soft stuff, which is equally important. And I think you're right. We've done some things really well in the past, and there's obviously plenty of areas that we can continue to improve. And best practice across the board in any area is ongoing and always evolving. But I'm really pleased to see the ongoing focus on those areas and recognising our history, all the good and the bad, in Australia. It's a heritage that I'm very proud of and very proud to be linked to, and a country that I'm very proud of.
Thank you. That's wonderful. And then after that, you went on to what, Sandy? What for listeners and readers?
So I moved a little bit into project management across different departments in New South Wales in particular. And one day met this charming young army officer, and he was something very different to what I'd seen before. I had no exposure or engagement with anyone in defence before. He initially told me he was in finance, and I remember saying, "Oh, well, that's boring, but as long as you enjoyed it." And then he said, "Oh, actually, I'm not in finance." You know, when he went on the date, and I turned out not to be crazy. He confessed and said, "Oh, I'm actually in the infantry." So that was a real education for me. And we didn't look back. So we then posted, well, I didn't, he posted, I followed, over to the US in 2016. So being in the deep south in Georgia at Fort Benning for the 12 months of the Trump election was absolutely another education that I wouldn't have been
exposed to. Oh, you were there then?
We were, and we were unmarried, and I was in science and biology to boot. So wow. It was an interesting time.
Wow. You were at the Smithsonian?
Yes, yeah. So one of the opportunities that I got as a result of being a defence spouse and having that posting opportunity with my then boyfriend was that when he deployed, I had a couple of months to kill. So I reached out through a contact of mine at Melbourne Museum to the Smithsonian, to his contacts over there, and said, "Hey, you know, I've got some time free. What can you use me for? This is my background." And they said, "Absolutely, come on down. We'll obviously pay you for your internship." And I went, "Well, you can't on the visa that I'm on." But they said, "All right, well, we'll sponsor your accommodation to kind of reduce the cost coming to Washington for that." And it was the best working holiday I think I could ever have had. I worked in the invertebrate zoology team for about eight weeks, so it was amazing.
Wow. It's not healthy, they say, to be jealous. I'm not jealous, but I'm envious. I think that's a wonderful experience to go through, and such a pivotal point in American history too, from the outside with the political thing happening. But what was your views on the Smithsonian? Was it everything you thought it would be?
It was. It was a real revelation for me. I was simultaneously figuring out what I wanted to do. I love biology. I love ecology. But I was also really, really interested in what was happening in the defence space. Yeah. And there was a really pivotal moment for me where my husband, as I said, boyfriend at the time, was deployed at the time while I was working there. And I received a call from a random soldier saying, you know, I work with your partner, and I just want to, you know, catch up with you. I understand you're at the Smithsonian. I'll meet you out the front. And I got off the phone and burst into tears because I thought something had happened.
Yeah,
wow. I thought he'd died. Luckily, he hadn't. So the individual made it very, very clear. Called straight back and went, I just realised what that would have sounded like. I'm really sorry. It's not anything like that. He's absolutely fine. I'm just here, you know, home on leave in the middle of a deployment, and he's given me a love letter for you. So he dropped that off to me, and I might have ignored the letter for a day or two because I was so annoyed. but no, it was really gorgeous. But one of those times that I think most events families go through when their loved one is away, where you're not sure if they're all right or not. And again, was a little bit of a lesson for me.
Yeah, wow, that's indeed something. And you sound similar to me. I would have been thinking the same thing because I suppose I have been known in the past to be a bit of a worrier, but there you go. So, and did you work with them? We'll go back to the defence thing in a minute because this is an interesting thing. Had you done some work with the Indigenous, the Land Council, the Aboriginal Land Council? Or is that?
Yeah, so a few years after that, I was offered the opportunity to support a brilliant initiative being led by the New South Wales Aboriginal Land Council. Mm-hmm. They brought me on board for 6 months to help them to design YAPA, their business and employment hub that they were establishing. It was the first of its kind to be established under the Indigenous Business Sector Strategy, led by Prime Minister and Cabinet. And it was a real honour to be in there. I obviously, you know, came in not having Indigenous roots myself. My partner grew up on an Aboriginal community, but he's not Indigenous himself. So it was good to learn more about that culture and particularly about that suite of cultures in New South Wales. I wasn't aware, and it was a real privilege to be able to support that great initiative that continues to go from strength to strength now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's wonderful. Yeah, I mean, growing up, I played football with some Indigenous kids, but apart from that, we really had been a lack of education in the white education system about Indigenous matters, and so it became a self-learning process growing up. So I think with what you did there, obviously you learned a lot.
Absolutely, yep.
That's good. Yeah. So then you'd been and you've done so much work. If we go back to your work within the defence aura or arena, you're with Defence Families of Australia at the moment. What does that actually mean to you, Sandy, and how are you being able to enact your experience in other matters here?
Sure. I suppose to take a step back, I need to explain how I ended up working with Penguin, or going from working with penguins to working with veterans.
Yep.
And it is sort of linked to the Smithsonian in some ways. We finished our posting period in the US at the end of 2016 and had some posting orders to go to Canberra. So I'd quit my job in Sydney and started, you know, job hunting in Canberra, looking at different roles in biology, government, project management. And then we got a late change to the posting order saying, well, actually, you're going back to Sydney. So that was a little bit awkward for me. But I was really lucky that my CV got spotted by our lieutenant colonel called Garth Callender, who's now the chair for the Bravery Trust. He was looking to set up the first veterans employment program in New South Wales, for the New South Wales government. And reached out and said, I reckon you've got some really handy skills and experience here. You know, let's have an interview. So I remember interviewing for him from you know, top to toe in snow gear in Whistler in Canada at the end of 2016, and then came and started work for him in 2017. And it was almost a sort of I don't know, a personal defining moment for me, where that experience, the skills, my passions, but also the need in the community sort of all aligned, and being able to find my purpose, which is now helping defence families and helping the defence community, was a huge relief, being able to find sort of what I wanted to do. So there'll be a number of jobs in that space, and I've already sort of occupied a few, but that the power of that purpose was really, really important. So now, since June, I've taken on the role of National Convener, the lead for Defence Families of Australia, which is the ministerially appointed body to advise government, particularly the Minister for Defence Personnel, and the Senior Leadership for Defence on all matters related to current serving families or current serving members and their families. It's a big role. It's a part-time team of amazing women. We've got a team of almost 12 on board. We've got a few new starters coming on at the moment, which is really exciting. And these women are all linked to current serving defence families. So we live it, we breathe it, and we're obviously really passionate about it. So our key remit is to help to push for improvements in policy to reduce the negative impacts of military service on families, and also to help to emphasise and support the positive impacts, because there are quite a few of those as well.
Yeah, that's true. In fact, probably the women around you, there could be 12 more inspirational Australian women. I'll be busy interviewing and talking with everyone.
100%. Yeah, I find them inspirational, that's for sure.
So with, of course, with your roles and the things you've done and the things you continue to do and will be doing with Defence Families of Australia, it is, to me, I suppose we grew up after our mother and father split up. Mum really brought us up as a solo single parent. And it was at an early age that I realised that that women, you know, if they put their mind to it, can do anything. Mum took on two jobs to make sure that we weren't out of sorts anywhere along the line. And it's about gaining respect. And I think also, what would your message be to young women today entering the education system or going through the education system to what can be achieved, Sandy?
I think for me, there's a couple of things. Women aren't great at tooting their own horns for the most part, and a good example of that is when you first asked me to be involved in this initiative, I didn't feel like I had anything to offer, but speaking to a few people and a few mentors of mine, they said no, it's really important that you share your story to show that the pathway doesn't need to be linear. You can follow your passions and still find where you fit, and where you fit today might be different to where you fit in 10 years time. It's going with what suits you and the needs of the community at the time. But I think there's also another lesson which has been hammered into me by one of my wonderful PhD supervisors, Professor Christy Muir. She said to me at one point, you know, wow, you've achieved a lot. And I said, yeah, I'm really lucky. And she went, no, you've worked your backside off. You've earned it. You know, don't shortchange your value. So we compromised on the fact that, you know, my hard work and achievements had attracted the right mentors, the right supporters, and encouraged me to keep going and keep improving. But I think that is a lesson that we as a cohort, as women, need to continue to push. And I think that's starting to happen, which again is really exciting.
Yeah, isn't that wonderful? I was with a woman who was very similar to me in that regard too. Of course, there's just some cockatoos flying over there, so that's all right. That was the noise. And of course, you know, if you say, "Well, I've been lucky," and then comes, I guess, the belief that you create your own luck, and that becomes part of your personal spiritual CV in the sense that you will attract good people into your life if you are focused enough to want to achieve and help others too, I guess, Sandy. That's a big part.
I think so. I think for me, I've made plenty of mistakes in my career so far, and I'm sure I'll continue to make plenty of mistakes, but having a growth mindset and being sure to stand by, be really clear on and stand by my core values helps me to keep learning and keep improving.
Yeah, wonderful stuff. And it's a message, of course, that we take to feel energised enough to be able to go about what you have to go about, and you're helping others. It becomes less of a job and more of a, I guess, a lifestyle that becomes embedded in your thinking, isn't it? That's for a lot of people.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. When you know, that old adage of, you know, you'll never work a day in your life if you find something that you love, is is true. And look, don't get me wrong, the current role I'm in and many other roles previously have been a lot of hard work and continue to be. But you do get energized by knowing that you're on a path that aligns with your values, that is making a difference. And it doesn't have to be in a social impact space that you're making a difference either. You can easily work in sales or any other space and still be making a difference. You're still driving change. I think it's finding what your purpose is, and that can be quite broad and applicable to many jobs, and then chasing it.
Yeah, how wonderful. How wonderful. And I can relate to that myself. and indeed, it's not really a job, but of course, if you help, and you know, we're probably not very good, a lot of us, at pushing our own barrow, but if we allow others to observe what we're doing and we have comments directed in a positive fashion, then we begin to associate that with ourselves and our work. So I for one, am in great proud to be speaking to you. Proud's the wrong word. I suppose happy to be speaking to you and to be able to hear your story and to be in the position to be able to share it with other Australians and worldwide too, Sandy. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Greg.